Keep in touch with the Wolf Connection podcast on our Instagram handle at the Wolf Connection Pod, or email us your questions, comments, and guest ideas to podcast@wolfconnection.org. Thank you for your support, and howls to you all. Welcome to the Wolf Connection podcast. I'm your host, John Calvin. Welcome to another edition of Wolf Tracks. Our continuing guest, as always, the incredible, great, the legend, Cutter Niemeyer. We have a ton of stuff to talk about. We were just discussing many different issues off camera while we weren't recording. First things first, Carter, how are you doing? I know you said Idaho's beautiful today. You got some nice weather. How's everything going with you so far?
Well, no complaints. We've been in a real cool spring, which actually is beneficial to plants. And we've got our gardens and our flower beds all in. And we've had weather hovering around the mid-70s to 80. So it's a gorgeous day with robin egg skies out there. And couldn't be nicer, actually.
Yeah. I mean, all your stuff on Facebook lately, surrounding your garden, surrounding the insects that are there that you've been showing. I mean, I get an education every single time. It must be a beautiful time of year for you and Jenny and like you said, the garden, for everything to be springing up and all these different insects and things that are just sort of flying around in your awesome garden there.
Yeah, and we had our first hummingbird visit our feeder on Mother's Day. So yeah, we kind of keep a diary of appearances of things like hummingbirds and things. That's kind of, we keep track from year to year to see how they compare, and the number of swallows that move in down here under the bridge. And so, yeah, I'm big on insects. So I kind of measure that progression of insect activity as the plants mature and as the bugs show up.
That's awesome. Yeah. Anybody who's not following Carter on Facebook, definitely, if you want to get away from some of the bad stuff in the world, he definitely gives some positive, beautiful colors of the plants and the insects and all the beautiful creatures and critters that are around his space. I guess our jumping off point for this, just, and again, we want to thank you for being involved with those four episodes when we talked about Cody Roberts and the incident with that wolf that happened in Wyoming. All those that were a part of that, Kim Bean, Kristen Combs, Emily Cohen, and Mike Koshmaral. But since that time, I guess let's just briefly discuss the fallout of what's going on, because we were talking about this before we started recording, and Kristen Combs from Wyoming Wildlife Advocates tipped this a little bit. But Carter, any insight you may have just about, we were talking about the incredible elk numbers that are in Wyoming right now. She even said bursting at the seams. We were talking about aerial gunning from, I believe, the state itself, because there are so many elk, giving out unlimited elk tags. I wouldn't say this is direct fallout from the Cody Roberts incident, but it really ties in with a lot of the anti-wolf, anti-predator sentiment that there are so many ungulates, they can't hunt them fast enough or get rid of them or kill them or harvest them fast enough, and they're not allowing their, you know, compatriots on the predator side to help them out with this situation. Where do you see this as all tying together with anti-predator and then having all these ungulates that, again, just can't be taken off the landscape quick enough?
Well, I think, as you just mentioned about the elk, I don't know if I need to belabor the fact that elk are super abundant in Wyoming. Same story in Idaho and Montana, and even states that aren't in as big a dispute of, you know, the wolves' impacts, like Oregon and Washington. Even their states too have abundant elk herds. So I think it's a no-brainer to sit around and argue any longer about, you know, we're killing wolves to save elk. That's just, to me, utter foolishness that people use that as an excuse. In Wyoming, I think it's irrefutable that the persecution of wolves is no different than it's always been for coyotes, mountain lions, bears, predators in general. Wyoming has been heavy-handed ever since I came to work in the state of Montana in the mid-1970s. They are in the business of killing predators. They spend a lot of money on it. During my lifetime and my career now in the West, the livestock industry number of sheep have declined, the number of cattle have declined over those 30 years. And yet they've got federal trappers, state trappers, and they have a lot of county trappers in Idaho, in Wyoming, that are just hammering coyotes. A friend of mine lives in Sheridan and said the local trapper there, I don't know who he's employed by, but he's killing like 1,200 coyotes a year or something of that order. And I ask, how many sheep are they trying to protect by killing that many? And he said, that's the interesting part. There are no sheep. So, I mean, this is apparently to protect calves. And again, it sounds, I'm just going to say, in my work experience, going back to the mid-1970s out west, I've never seen much coyote damage to calves. There's a time for when they're really small calves and they're really vulnerable that coyotes are a factor on them, but those calves grow up quick and they become unmanageable for a coyote. Not to say that a coyote here and there kills them, but for Wyoming to maintain this war on predators, it's just simply something they do, something they're committed to doing, and they justify killing wolves year round in 85% of the state simply because it's to protect their livestock from wolves. And I mean, we're talking livestock losses, you know, 0.0042%. So I mean, even then, in my mind, there's no justification for this war on predators in Idaho, Montana, or Wyoming based on the proportion of losses compared to all the ways livestock die. I mean, we've talked about this over and over where, I mean, predator loss is probably around 4% of livestock out there on the range at any one year. But the 96% is caused by all these other factors of, you know, illness and birthing problems, poison weed, and all the things we talk about. But Wyoming is insistent that they will keep killing predators. So I'll let you guide the discussion, but this all reflects back on the Cody Roberts persecution thing and other developments going on down there.
Well, before we go into that, what is the most reliable source, I guess, that you're aware of or that you use for people who want to know about current elk numbers or trends over time in their state? Where do people go to find reliable information about what elk have been doing and kind of in a way they can compare it to wolf reintroductions and wolf populations, things like that? Does that exist somewhere where anyone can go and just, you know, get real numbers, real data? Because it's like we're all on different pages about this, it seems, still, but there's an objective truth and it exists somewhere. So what's the acceptable best source of data that you are aware of?
Well, being really simplistic, go on the internet, type in the state of Wyoming. Just ask the question, how many elk are in Wyoming? And put a date on it, 2023, 2022. For the average person, that's to me the simplest way, because these updated reports by writers, just people doing as journalists do, asking those questions, you can see this trend and you can see these numbers. That's where I get the numbers. And same with these record elk harvests they've had. It's happened in the last 10 years, it's happened in Montana, Idaho, and Wyoming. It's clearly documented in reports in just the good old hometown papers, unquestionable that these harvests maintain and have been high. And we were just talking earlier, Wyoming just set a new record harvest. You can't have record harvests if wolves and mountain lions and black bears and all these predators out here are destroying them. So, but in to me, it's absolutely the reverse. The abundance of elk and deer and moose and prey base is why we have such abundant populations of black bears, mountain lions, and wolves. And tremendous food base. If it wasn't that way, if there wasn't all this abundant prey, we wouldn't be talking these tremendous numbers of predators that we all know we also have here and we're blessed with. But others look at it as a curse, I guess. So somewhere along the line, the information has become misinformation because people are trying to justify killing wolves, whether it's recreational or through predator control programs, to somehow say, well, we're trying to save the elk. And that's just erroneous.
Yeah, because we've seen it. I mean, there's been multiple people, obviously yourself being one of them, that has talked about this. And it's you know, it's in these numbers that we keep seeing. I mean, when you talk about, obviously, you know, we talk about Wyoming specifically as we stay on this track. And I know this came out, I think not too long, I think a week ago, Jackson Hole News and Guide, where they were talking about specifically coyote whacking. And basically that the Forest Service and Bureau of Land Management can't do anything about this, is that the federal agency, that the state must direct reform. So in a nutshell, I'm assuming, Carter, and please, you know, expand from what you can. There's a quote here. This is from Brad Purdy, who told News and Guy, it's not within our regulatory authority. Purdy is the Bureau of Land Management's Deputy State Director of Communications for Wyoming. If we don't have the regulatory authority, it would be illegal for us to try and overstep in that way. So they're washing their hands of this, which is, for those of you that need a refresher on Cody Roberts, he ran down this wolf with a snowmobile, injured it, and brought it to a bar, and then ultimately killed it outside of this bar. But we're trying to ban that type of hunting activity. I don't even know really what to call it at this point. But now it's getting lost in the legal weeds of who's able to take care of this. What are you able to educate any of us here about that in between Bureau of Land Management, Forest Service, and then are they federal agencies telling that Wyoming needs to come up with a state reform or a state statute that is like, this is no longer allowed? Is that where we're at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I'm no expert on this. Forest Service and Bureau of Land Management both have said, basically, we can't do a thing about it. I find it interesting, just to digress to the fact, just a few months ago, the use of sodium cyanide M44 devices, which are used to kill coyotes, and they're used on private land and public lands like Forest Service and BLM, that was discontinued. The Bureau of Land Management came out and said they're not going to allow the use of M44s on their land anymore. And there's advocates right now working, you know, legally to see if we can't get the same outcome with the U.S. Forest Service. So to me, it seems contradictory that they're talking about M44 devices no longer used to kill coyotes on Bureau of Land Management. What's the difference between an M44 and a snowmobile? I mean, other than we're talking about two different units of methodology of getting predators killed. So yeah, where it's confusing to me as well, the federal land managers are saying, well, yeah, but we don't manage the wildlife on the public lands. We defer to the Wyoming Fish and Game Department. And then interestingly, when the Fish and Game Department are approached about killing predators, they say, Well, you see, we don't handle predator control. The state, the Wyoming State Department of Agriculture, handles predator control. And then from my work career, anytime you hand it over to the departments of agriculture, they firmly defend and look out for the livestock producer. So here again, this coyote whacking or wolf killing and the arrangements that are legally going on right now, it's kind of hand me down. It's not my responsibility, it's his. And then go to the next step, they go, well, it's not us, it's them. So I guess to the best way I see to deal with this is, I hear Wyoming does not like to be criticized by out-of-staters. So I think what the focus has got to be is on the Wyoming Department of Fish and Game to push for changes in the laws and the statutes coming out of the legislature to stop permitting wolves and coyotes to be whacked, whether on private or public lands. I think that's going to be the most receptive way that the state of Wyoming is going to be sensitive to people's concerns. Because I've been talking to folks and who know the way things go down in Wyoming, for example, and just said, you know, Wyoming really resents out-of-staters writing to us, phoning us, calling us, telling us what you think. We take care of our own problems and we deal with our own issues within the state. So if you're an advocate or somebody and you live in Wyoming, I think you have the greatest opportunity to, you know, exercise some kind of influence to get these laws changed. But, and then people who are hunters and are going to get defensive about hunting again, coyote whacking isn't hunting, people. I mean, there's no way you could ever convince me or that you can infer that hunting is chasing animals down with pickup trucks, ATVs, snowmobiles, whatever you want to call it. I just wish hunters would look out for their own recreational sport by getting rid of this kind of killing. This has nothing to do with hunting, it's killing. And Cody Roberts just, you know, showed us the ugliest underbelly of how low people can go to legally go out and kill animals.
Yeah, I think that was one of the most disturbing things is when we were doing a deeper dive into this about all of the other predators that or that were considered vermin in this situation, when you're talking about raccoons and skunks and all these jackrabbits, and you wouldn't think that all these things would be classified in the same spot, but it just seems to be something that Wyoming has been doing for years upon years upon years. And I know we've talked about the ugly side of this for a while now, and you know, people are obviously putting their dollars and their voice to hopefully good uses here. And one of those that I know, Carter, you promoted a little bit too, and that Wolves of the Rockies, Wyoming Wildlife, is this Hogs for Hope fundraiser, which we are, for those of you listening to this episode, we are going to have Jonas Black on the podcast, who is really, he's a renowned dog trainer from Austin, Texas. We're going to have him on the podcast to discuss more about this fundraiser, obviously how it came about, how he's doing this. But what does it say, Carter, for folks that are outside of the state? And I know you just mentioned that Wyoming doesn't like folks outside of Wyoming talking about how they should do things in their state. But there really seems to be a rallying cry outside of Wyoming for people to come and donate money to state reform, for wildlife conservation, to do it in any way possible. What does something like Hogs for Hope mean for folks just to be able to give their money and know that it's going towards something that really resonates with them?
I think it's great. I read the story like everyone else, and they're not coming there to Daniel, Wyoming to cause trouble. They're just going to start out, a couple of bikers are going to start riding from Texas, and I think share the course of their travel with others, and they're encouraging you to join them, whether you got a bike. They said you could even jump on your bicycle or ride horse if you want. I think it's a great idea because they're going to have a little memorial service for this wolf, the bikers, Mr. Black, I think, named the wolf Hope. And they're trying to draw attention, and it's going to raise funds. And I believe those funds will channel into legal or political channels within Wyoming and provide dividends. Wyoming should be ashamed. I just don't see how you, with a straight face, whether you're the governor or the director of the Fish and Game Department, can keep allowing and promoting this barbaric treatment, disrespectful treatment of animals, and see this thing going on in the 21st century. And you know, and they say they're outraged and disgusted and all these words too. So I'm really waiting for this to translate into some change in the law. It's not taking away anything from anyone. It's not going to diminish protection of livestock. It's not going to diminish for those who think they're saving elk. And it's certainly not going to take away from hunting, because running down animals on snowmobiles is not hunting. So I hope they raise a lot of money, and I hope the money is channeled toward the political system of letting Wyoming demonstrate for us that we can take care of it ourselves, and we're going to get rid of this permissive.
Well, speaking of livestock, we should probably talk a little bit about just Colorado wolves and if there's been any updates. I know there have been a few cattle. There's been a few. I don't know if they said if they were just youngsters or adult cows, but I know a few were taken. But do you have any updates on kind of how that's been looking?
Bits and pieces of information from different people. I think the count now, two of the wolves that were reintroduced of the 10 brought in from Oregon likely have a den of pups. And
wow.
The male wolf has been coming down, and I think the tally in this one ranching area is up to about 9 dead stock. And we're talking, I think, both newborn or young calves, and we're talking yearlings too. So they're killing small stock, yearlings of several hundred pounds. The wolf that's allegedly doing the killing has got a faulty radio collar that I think needs to be replaced if they can catch the animal. And I know tempers are short now in that area more than ever. I mean, this is the kind of work I used to do for my career. And now is the time people need to be communicating, not, withdrawing to their individual camps and refusing to talk to each other. But I know people are frustrated from everything I hear. It's a new program. I'm sure their personnel are new. They're being tested. It's a really tough job when you're the person driving in a situation like this, and people are gonna, use their frustrations on you, and it's uncomfortable for everyone. I don't know what they're gonna do next, but I know it's the worst case scenario I can imagine when you got two new wolves brought in from Oregon. One's got a faulty collar. The other one appears to be not moving much. So it's probably in a den with feeding pups. The reporters in the media have said wolves killed, and the governor and Colorado Parks and Wildlife director says we're not going to kill them. So stay tuned.
Man, wow. It's going to be a tense. It's already been tense as it is. And then, yeah, you're right. For this to be the first couple of months, it's not going to bode well. But like you said, yeah, I mean, anybody who's listening in either of those camps, I don't know if anybody listens to this or our podcast, but with Carter, I think we would all agree here, come to the table and try and find solutions other than retreating and being angry. And I'm sure there is anger to go around, and that to me is fair. There should be frustration, there should be anger, but that shouldn't lead to rash decision-making on either side. And that there's been a lot of work put in, and all that work shouldn't go by the wayside because of stuff that is happening early on. So hopefully, yeah, we'll keep you all updated for any information that we find, that Carter finds, and we'll obviously do a podcast about it if we hear about what's happening. I want to go national for this next one, Carter, because this is gaining traction, and this is something that could feasibly really flip everything on its head. Those of you that are listening or that have heard about HR 764, this is the Trust the Science Act that was put forward by Lauren Boebert from Colorado, I believe. Yeah, from Colorado. And so Trust the Science Act, it went through the House. It passed the House by, I believe, 4 or 5 votes. There were some Democrats that voted for this. So it goes to the Senate, and if it passes the Senate, it then goes to President Biden's desk to be signed into law. So basically, this would be removing those endangered species protections from the gray wolf in totality, no matter where they are in the country. Where do you see this heading, Carter, as it gets to the Senate? Is this something that, obviously, if you're looking at this, you don't agree with this, contact your senators, tell them not to vote for this one way or the other if this is something that you want to get involved in. But Carter, from your perspective, have we ever seen a bill similar to this or like this in your lifetime? And what would this actually mean if this does go through the Senate and get signed into law? What kind of things are we looking at here if this comes to fruition?
Well, it's national. So, I mean, we've been through, yeah, I think wolves, I can't remember all the details. We've had them nationally delisted before. And immediately in the Great Lakes states, you know, Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, there were some wolf hunts organized quickly and some wolves killed. And then we're back to relisted again. I don't really know much about what the Senate's going to say. I have heard a few confident people tell me, well, it's not going to fly in the Senate. You know, they're not going to go with it. I certainly can't tell you what the Senate's going to do, but I think it's always a tougher sell when it goes from the the House up to the Senate to decide. But yeah, if it's a national delisting again, then where wolves are protected now, they would no longer be protected, including Colorado, who's in their infancy stage of their reintroduction. So it would sure change the playing field. I saw in one news article too, there was mention of, you know, no judiciary review, which reminds me of the similarities of when Idaho and Montana got their wolves delisted, and there was no judiciary review allowed with that. And it's kind of in concrete now. So regardless of what goes on in other parts of the country, you know, Idaho and Montana's they're delisted, and they're going to stay that way, the way it appears. So, I don't know. I mean, there's going to be this steady push. There's no doubt in my mind that year after year after year, certain representatives and senators are going to come back at this thing until probably until they get it done. So I'm one of them guys that just said, maybe we ought to have a large carnivore act of some sort. You know, we have the Golden Eagle Act, Bald Eagle Act, Wild Horse Act. Maybe we need a large carnivore act where grizzly bears and wolves, for example, are managed under some federal act. I'll certainly admit we have a lot of wolves in a lot of places. They're technically they're probably not endangered as defined. But we certainly, the other politics going on is there's this effort now to have a national wolf plan, which was being pushed for before we did the reintroduction of wolves into Yellowstone and Idaho. You know, what are we going to do when we reintroduce wolves? We got to have a national plan for all of the states and all of the wolf habitat and all of the places that wolves can live and how many we're going to have. And because of that, there's been so many lawsuits, I couldn't even imagine how many there have been about listing, delisting, back and forth. And it's because we have this piecemeal populations. We have a distinct population segment in the Rocky Mountains. We have one in the Great Lakes region. And then you have the Mexican wolf down south. And each of these are individual populations. And so there's been efforts to let's delist these. And for whatever reason, judges have told the Fish and Wildlife Service, in the end, go back to the drawing board. You know, this is unacceptable. And that's where we stand now. I believe before Trump retired from the presidency that they did delist wolves, only to have them relisted again now.
Yeah. It seems that there's this push-pull all the time where nothing, like you said, nothing's consistent. So you have, like you said, this coincides with having delisting all gray wolves across the country, while also trying to come up with a national recovery management plan. So it just it really seems as though they're trying to do too many things at once, and there's no real answer or no real formula on how to get this done. And it's just people, you know, shooting whatever they want to shoot to stick against the wall, and it comes out so convoluted and so confusing that, you know, like you said, you have the Northern Rocky Mountains that are not part of any of this stuff, and the Mexican grays are different, and the Great Lakes, it's just, there's no one consistent plan. I just don't know. I don't know if we're ever going to get there at the federal level, or if we do, it's going to be after our lifetimes when maybe people come back to their senses. I don't know. What do you feel about that?
Well, to me, the common sense right now is if we're talking about a national wolf recovery plan, why don't we do that? Why don't we take on that plan, develop it, get it done once and for all, and then talk about delisting them instead of, I just feel like this new bill at Bobbert reintroduced and the House just sent it out the door is just, again, getting the cart ahead of the horse. And what's that going to do to this national plan we're talking about? I mean, it just seems like you'd take the first step first and then delist them or whatever you're going to do. That's common sense tells me, but sense hasn't. There's a lot of common sense, I was told, because nobody uses it.
Yeah. I want to bring up something that's a little bit unrelated. I don't know, it just made me think of it, but are you familiar with the Lolo zone, I believe it's called?
Some.
Is it like an elk zone?
I've heard the stories.
Yeah. Yeah, I was reading about this place, essentially an elk zone where there was a peak of 16,000 elk, and over something like 25 years there, that has come down to about 1,000, and they're doing some focused predator management that is assumed to help those elk to rebound. And I'm wondering if you have any insight on this and whether there's another way to look at it.
Yeah, somewhat. First of all, I will say I'm a skeptic, because what I say next will reveal I'm a skeptic. You have to know the history of Idaho, and you go back to the big fires of 1910. And again, you go on and read about the fires of 1910 that burned across North Idaho. It burned down cities, it killed people, and it burned down forests. Those forests grew back, or let me, the forest burned down. And as a result of those catastrophic fires, obviously some of the best browse you can imagine was created, which forms a component of the habitat that elk need. So North Idaho was once upon a time this fantastic elk hunting area and had large numbers, because anywhere fire burns, that's good, because get rid of that overhead canopy and the shade that it creates, then browse grows on the ground, which is beneficial to elk and deer and other species. So we went through that trend where browse was available, the habitat was what elk needed as a result of the fire. So elk hunting was good. Well, these forests have grown back, and the government spends billions of dollars a year now suppressing fires and putting them out. But the bottom line is elk need browse to live. So the Lolo, I went to two different elk summits were held in Idaho after I came here to talk about this whole issue. And the U.S. Forest Service and the Idaho Department of Fish and Game were the kind of the moderators of these elk summits that were sponsored, I think, by Congressman Crapo from Idaho at the time. And I listened to the discussions, I sat in the audience, and essentially, to put it simple, Forest Service, Fish and Game both said, it's habitat, stupid. Habitat, habitat, habitat. And at one meeting where after they announced that at the end, about 50 people stood up and said, kill all the goddamn wolves. So in one ear, out the other, nobody listened. And so here we are since, I believe, around 2012 up until this year, on average, about 20 to 25 wolves have been killed in the Lolo Clearwater area to, quote, save elk and increase elk numbers. Obviously, it appears that it's not working, because we're doing it year after year after year and having to do it again. People can check this out, but the scuttlebutt now is that Idaho Department of Fish and Game have actually talked about and are deciding perhaps to lower management objectives for the Lolo, that maybe we're trying to bring back elk that we can't bring back. Maybe we set our objectives too high. So those discussions I'm hearing about. So in the meantime, Idaho Fish and Game have that prerogative to kill about 20 wolves a year up there, and that's what they're doing. And I believe they shot some more. They usually do it about February after the hunting seasons are over, and these killing these number of wolves always seems to result in more wolves in that same area to go back and kill the following year. So that's what I know about it. And I think if the habitat is there for elk, that by now they would have responded and their numbers would have come up, whether you're shooting wolves or not shooting wolves.
Does this coincide at all, Carter, with, this is actually one of the things, it's weird, this is kind of like an easy transition, but Boise State Public Radio actually had an article here or a story that wolf hunting, trapping, and wildlife service removal has actually gone down in the state of Idaho. This is according to this report. It says the total number of wolves killed is about 10% lower than last year and 20% lower than the past 3 years, meaning that they're not killing as many, I believe. The total number of wolves killed, yeah. Is that having to do with that? Are they rethinking things in certain parts of the state? Is this kind of a one-off? It says about a third of all wolf kills in Idaho in the last year would be prohibited going forward under the changes. What does it say here? Oh, Ulrich? Is that how you say his name? O-O-E-L? Does that sound about right? Ulrich? Katie Ulrich, yeah. Noted that a recent court injunction could dramatically reduce the number of wolves killed next year. The order issued by a federal judge in March forced Fish and Game to curtail the locations and duration of wolf trapping seasons to protect grizzly bears. So this also goes with that. And then I think the article goes on to say that they're going to be paying ranchers then to kill wolves or something like that. Have you heard any more about this? And it does that coincide with what Stephen was talking about?
Yeah, well, I shouldn't reveal it, but I was part of that court case that was recently decided that wolf trapping was going to be restricted in grizzly bear range. I was involved as an expert witness in both a case in Montana, one in Idaho, where the judges ruled in both cases to this kind of a preliminary injunction was the result. And I think it was just recently upheld by a lower court. So the reflection that this may have had was it shortened the wolf trapping in grizzly range and actually pretty broad areas of the state of Idaho. We'll just talk about Idaho here, not Montana. So I believe Katie Ulrich is alluding to the fact that because this trapping season was shortened, you start trapping wolves later because of the possibility that grizzly bears are staying out later due to climate change. The grizzly bears come out in the spring sooner as a result of climate change and the warmer temperatures. So the wolf trapping season was shortened. Start later in the fall and earlier in the spring. And I believe Katie Ulrich did the math that suggested that that could affect up to 30% of the state and reduce wolf killing opportunities there, which could result in fewer wolves taken. So I think that's one of the reasons there could be fewer killed this year. And then I'll just go back to the basics. The wolf population in Idaho, in my opinion, again, it's not an estimate, it's a guesstimate. Do they really know how many wolves they have? And that's still something I think scientists are debating, whether, you know, using these camera matrix methods of trail cameras telling you how many wolves you can guesstimate you have versus what do hunters tell you they think there are. And then there's a patch occupancy that is used. I believe Montana was still using that method. So there's all these ways of counting wolves. And the public, we accept that Idaho Fish and Game or Montana Fish Wildlife and Parks are telling us they know how many wolves they have. But do they? So I say too, maybe you don't have as many wolves out there that you can kill, which is also going to lower the take. But since July until the present time, the count is 389 wolves were killed by hunters and trappers in Idaho. That's just human caused death. Or figure in natural death, you know, wolves fighting each other, killing each other, inter and intra pack strife, disease, and all the other things that might kill a wolf out there. So 389 are what we know have been brought through the check stations or the offices and documented, which is a lot of wolves. I mean, if you think they guesstimate there's 1300 and some wolves in Idaho, if you round 389 up to 400, you shot, trapped fourth of your wolf population, or higher, actually, probably 30%, roughly, which is, it's in the ballpark. I mean, when you start reading books by Dr. David Meach and that, they say you can kill 30-35% of your population and not destroy growth and sustainability. So Idaho's right on target, although they wrote a new wolf plan that they want to get rid of 60% of their population because they think there's too many. So they didn't achieve that objective again this year. But we have now that, you know, we've talked about that before, but Idaho is paying between, I don't know, $1,000-$2,000 a piece to kill wolves, whether it's newborn puppies in a den or adult-sized wolves. So we're still on this fool's errand too of insisting that we get all these wolf numbers reduced. So let's just keep throwing good money after bad and keep trying.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an ever-evolving thing, but it feels like it just, it's hard to get past that resistance or that back and forth about what's true and what's not. That's the most incredible part of this whole topic after the amount of episodes that we've done is just, it seems like we're having such a hard time just getting on the same page about what is even the reality. And I can tell that it's exhausting for a lot of people that we talk to, and that's totally understandable. There's a certain amount of fatigue with just this back and forth about what is objectively real. It's so hard to find an objective reality these days because there's so much information just going back and forth, just contradicting itself. Just this never-ending contradiction and disagreement. But, you know, wolf advocates certainly keep trying and keep trying tirelessly to get this information across. And I mean, what do you think? Why, you know, what do we stand to lose? What does North America stand to lose if people just give in and say, all right, you know what? There's been enough drama, enough resistance. And obviously so many people don't want wolves back in the West. You win. Get rid of them and let's just not talk about this anymore. You know, what keeps someone like you who continues to trying, and what do we stand to lose culturally or environmentally if, you know, folks just throw in the towel?
Well, we're losing a native species, number one. The wolves are here. We all know that. And now they're back. I absolutely would not give up advocating for wolves because so much of the persecution of wolves right now is built on false premise. Nobody's gone out of business. The livestock industry is not going to disappear. Cattlemen are not going to go out of business. Sheepmen are not going out.
And this goes back to the objective reality problem, which is why is everyone saying it is happening?
Well, it's frustrating. And why I tell people don't give up, because it's just utter foolishness. And I've heard this, I mean, for 30 years, I've heard and read where we can't survive another year with wolves. Yes, you can. You survived with mountain lions and black bears and grizzly bears, and there's far more of them than there are wolves. And then you got coyotes, hundreds of thousands of coyotes, and you've survived all of them. And working in predator control for my career, all this excess killing of predators does not buy anyone anything. It just costs taxpayers a fortune. We spend billions of dollars killing predators for no consequence. It's not buying you anything. It's not protecting anything. It's It's recreational, it's cultural, it's all of those things. Working in predator control my whole career, the one part of predator control I absolutely believe helps and can alleviate problems is targeted removal of problem predators. If there's a couple of coyotes or a family of coyotes killing sheep, remove that family of coyotes. That will do more for the sheep industry than anything. Flying around all winter, like I was part of that when I worked for Wildlife Services, fly around all winter and shoot 12 or 13,000 coyotes with helicopters and airplanes on a good snow cover, there's no purpose in that. We're only killing those coyotes because they might eat a sheep or they might kill a calf. 99.9% of those coyotes are never going to kill a calf or kill a sheep. They're going to be killing meadow voles and cottontail rabbits and what coyotes eat. So, yeah, you know, then I go back. I keep always bringing up the issue of public land. So many of these states, I'll just target Idaho to keep it simple, but about 60% of the state of Idaho is public land. Why in the world do we want to eradicate or simply just kill coyotes, wolves, bears, lions, whatever, in the name of livestock on public land, for instance? There's no purpose except targeted removal, in my opinion. So I say, let's keep up the fight. And if advocacy wins out and we can make life better for these predators, it ain't gonna be a tinker's damn difference to the livestock industry or to hunting or anything. It's just hype. And I read about it every day till I just get sick of reading about it. You know, and we're doing this to protect livestock. We're doing this to save elk. We're doing this to save mule deer. No, you're not. I mean, in reality, you're not. But as long as the power, I call the people making the decisions to me are the powers that be. And as long as the powers that be are in power, we just keep doing this same insane approach year after year after year. And it's probably, like you mentioned, it might be going on long after our lives are ended. Keep up the fight.
Yeah. It just seems like a sick cycle that continues to happen. I mean, I don't know. Just reading through the rest of this. And obviously anybody that's listening, we're going to have all these articles in the description so you guys can follow along with the stuff that we talked about today. I guess the last thing that I'll just touch on here, and Stephen, you let me know if you have any other things that come up, you let me know. Carter, we've talked about obviously this broad spectrum of, you know, predator killing and these wolf management plans and things not, you know, and pro wolf advocates, you know, continuing to take up the mantle and make sure that they continue to fight for wolves. But this one, I know this is out of a lot. Sometimes we forget about the Great Lakes, and we talk about Wisconsin every once in a while here, but there was something where a Dane County judge dismissed the lawsuit to revoke the state wolf plan that was recently put into place, because there were a lot of advocates and groups up there that said, I think there was too much take, or they were putting in a, let's see, what did it say here? The group accused, here we go. In November, the Great Lakes Wildlife Alliance sued the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, which is DNR, and the Natural Resources Board. The group accused state wildlife regulators of violating the state's open meetings law and rejecting public input from the group and wolf researchers. So basically not taking into account any of the non-consumptive community's comments. I think there was something upwards of... hang on 1 second before I get the number wrong and I have somebody come after me and say I wasn't reading. Oh, failing to consider more than 2,000 comments. So not taking into account what people, basically you have a public comment period, people comment about something and they don't take into effect. Again, I think I would just sort of echo Stephen, like, what do you do if you're in Wisconsin? If this is something that clearly, so they dismissed this lawsuit, is the path, the trajectory to continue to keep hounding DNR, talking to their senators, their governors, their county legislators? What's the track here, I guess, for folks that are up there in Wisconsin that are not happy with the way this wolf plan has come to pass?
Well, I guess join the established group. There's a lady there named, I believe, Melissa Smith, perhaps. And I'm not sure what the name that their group may be in that news report or article, that they're deciding whether to appeal this judge's decision. But right now, I mean, if the judge says, I'm throwing it out, I guess that's the decision that's been made. But yeah, I think the discussion or the debate is about members of this commissioner board having conversations without the public being able to sit in the room and talk about it. And their plan, the judge or decide, well, two or three, you didn't have enough people there for a quorum one way or the other, but still, you know, the Melissa's group saying, yeah, well, even if two people met, you can go out and talk to the others and convince them to change their mind. So, yeah, I mean, that's where it's at. I guess the judge's decision stands, and the group that's wanting this to go ahead and happen are going to decide whether they're going to appeal it or have a different way to hold their...
Yeah. Do all this stuff.
Yeah, there's so many of these things are so nebulous that, and then, you know, don't know all the other details. There's so many details that none of us are privy to. Right or wrong.
It's crazy. I mean, Carter, as always, it's great to obviously get your opinions, your objectives, your knowledge for the amount of years that you've been doing this, and, you know, just to continue to come on with Stephen and I and answer the questions and you know, give people places to go, and just to, I think, hear your voice and understand that, you know, there's still stuff to be done and that there are avenues to be able to do it. So as always, we can't thank you enough for coming on again and continue to do this little segment with Stephen and I. It's really caught on and people really enjoy it. So we can't thank you enough for that, for doing that.
I have one more item if we can.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
Yeah. I just wanted to point out that we lost one of our staunchest wolf advocates in the state of Idaho. Lynn Stone was her name. I posted kind of a tribute to her on my, Facebook page, and the family still hasn't come out with an obituary, but I intend to tell some stories, show some pictures when we know more about the rest of Lynn's story and life and what her family wants to share. But anyway, she's a legend here, and her and I were arch enemies when I first moved to Idaho. She did not like me, and I reserved judgment. I didn't have any reason not to like her, but we became friends. I wrote about her in my book, Wolfer, too. But yeah, she's fought the good fight. She was out there in her pickup truck spying on people and stirring up the politics. And really, she was putting a lot of sticks in the spokes of the anti-wolf movement at the time. And one legendary wolf hater in Idaho tried to choke her with her own camera strap when he was trying to steal her camera from her, and the sheriff come out and arrested the anti-wolf dude. And so, I mean, it's been a colorful history with Lynn, and she died way too young, but we're gonna miss her. And maybe we do these podcasts down the road, no more, we'll share some of the stories, because Lynn and I parted company being really good friends, and I admired her a lot. And you look back a lot of this now, you can laugh about it, but good wolf advocates out there stirring it up, and Lynn knew how to do it with the best of them. And so if you get a chance, I'll share more, and maybe hearing about Lynn will give some other people some ideas down the road for their own advocacy.
We agree. Absolutely. Yeah. We'll make it a point next time once we know more. But yeah, let's, you know, a huge shout out to Lynn and all the work that she did, not only with you, but everybody there in Idaho. And that's a great way to take us off with this one. Carter, thanks for that. Thanks for interjecting and putting that beautiful tribute out there. Yeah, howls to you all out there. And we'll be with you next time when Carter's back for Wolf Tracks. Talk to you later. Bye, everybody. Looking for more information about Wolf Connection or the podcast? Please visit our website at wolfconnection.org, where you can donate, sponsor a wolf, or become a volunteer.